It's Friday, February 4, 2011. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Events continued to escalate on Thursday as rioters and revolutionaries met in the streets of Cairo and other major Egyptian cities. Add to that the fact that both opponents and supporters of the Mubarak regime faced off once again. It was another day of deadly and intense conflict, not on the scale of Wednesday, but clearly something is about to happen. History is about to break. What's new? Well, the most significant new development is the role of the Obama administration, or at least the attempted role of the American administration, in serving as a broker for the exit of President Mubarak. According to international press reports, the Obama administration proposes that the Egyptian president, a strong man and autocratic leader now in place for over three decades, would leave almost immediately to be followed by a caretaker government that will be led by current Vice President Omar Suleiman. Now, President Mubarak has said as of yesterday that he will not leave office. As a matter of fact, in an interview with ABC News' Christian Amanpour, Mr. Mubarak said that the only alternative to himself is chaos, referring to those who were on the streets of Cairo and the streets of Egyptian cities beyond. He said that they were simply a mob and that there was no way to do business with a mob. Now, the way that President Mubarak has remained in office all of these years is by continuously presenting himself as the only alternative to disorder and anarchy. Egyptians, like all people, prize order. They want an ordered civilization in which they can depend upon government services, freedom, and the ability to move about. The economy establishes itself on such stability, and that matters not only for multinational corporations, but for families, and for that matter, for individuals as well. So the price of revolution can often be high. Christians watching developments right now in Egypt and the Middle East should be watching for what this means in terms of the human hunger for order, and to understand that that human hunger for stability does have its limits. It had its limits in what we now call the American Revolution. It has had its limits in many other contexts in world history. But exactly when that limit is reached seems to differ in very different historical circumstances and very different cultures. Now, there are a couple of other things that are quite interesting in terms of developments in Egypt. Scott Atran, writing for the New York Times, points out that the Muslim Brotherhood, which in many ways is the original Muslim extremist group, seems to have been unable to capitalize upon all of this. I find it interesting that according to these international reports, the Muslim Brotherhood did not join these protests when they first began. And for that reason, the 100,000-member group is relatively without a voice, now disdained by those who began and largely led this revolution. Now, the Muslim Brotherhood needs to be remembered as the group that gave birth to much of today's Islamic terrorism. For one thing, just remember that Hamas, the terrorist group that is so powerful in Gaza, is itself the local branch of the Muslim Brotherhood. But in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood has attempted to play politics and not to enter into violence. And for that reason, the Muslim Brotherhood is now considered soft and has actually been both criticized and attacked by groups like Al-Qaeda. Now, as Mr. Atran reminds us, Al-Qaeda is always nearby. He describes it as the consummate opportunist organization, and you can count on the fact that it's going to try to capitalize on this one way or the other. A similar report comes from John Leland, who reports from Baghdad that the opening in Cairo has other jihadi groups rather, at this point, unimpressed. Why? Because it appears that these groups that are on the streets of Cairo and Alexandria and other Egyptian cities, at least at this point, do not represent the kind of jihadist agenda that we've seen in other parts of the Muslim world. Now, the Muslim press, picking up on the chatter of the Muslim street, has also shared some of the humor that appears to have been occasioned by the developments in Egypt. I particularly enjoyed this joke, which is now told on the Arab streets, this one reported by John Leland in the New York Times. According to the joke, President Barack Obama, in a conversation with President Mubarak, suggests that it's time for him to write a farewell note to the Egyptian people. Mr. Mubarak replies, "Why? Where are they going?" Almost by definition, revolutionary movements move by fits and starts. What will the weekend hold? Well, the likelihood is that it will hold an intensification of what we have seen in recent days. In any event, we'll continue to track these issues closely and look for signs of a reshaped future for the Middle East, and Egypt in particular. Another scandal has hit the organization known as Planned Parenthood. Avery Johnson, reporting for the Wall Street Journal, tells us that a video that was taped undercover depicts one of the Planned Parenthood clinic managers advising a purported sex trafficker about how to care for underage prostitutes. The manager's name is Amy Woodruff. She was not available for comment from Planned Parenthood, but Planned Parenthood did say this: "We were profoundly shocked when we viewed the videotape depicting an employee of one of our health centers behaving in a repugnant manner that is inconsistent with our standards of care," end quote. That was said by Phyllis Kinsler, the chief executive of Planned Parenthood of Central New Jersey. Now, here's what's going on. According to the video, the dialogue between the manager and the alleged sex trafficker represent, quote, "a complete collapse in judgment." That was said by Planned Parenthood's Vice President of Communications, Scott Scheer. Legal authorities in New Jersey have been contacted, but according to Avery Johnson, the clandestine video showed the two people in a discussion with the clinic's manager about abortions, contraceptives, and treatments for sexually transmitted diseases for girls as young as 14 who might be illegal immigrants. The video appears to show the manager telling the sex trafficker that the girl should lie about their age to avoid mandatory reporting requirements. She also said, quote, "For the most part, we want as little information as possible," end quote. Now, there's no doubt that Planned Parenthood is scrambling to respond to this, and their first response is not that it didn't happen, but that it's an aberration. And, very clearly, Planned Parenthood spokespersons, both at the national and state level, have rushed to establish distance between themselves and this local manager, or former manager in New Jersey of a Planned Parenthood installation. But what we need to remember is that Planned Parenthood is in this business. This is what it does. And time after time, there have come pieces of evidence that Planned Parenthood clinics are about this kind of business. It is for this reason that this particular video resonates with the concerns of many, and it is likely it's going to resonate with the concerns of prosecutors as well. Some of you have likely seen a scientific study that has been reported in recent days suggesting that it is not abortion that causes issues for women's mental health, but instead having babies. The Associated Press reports that it was a Danish study, including 365-plus women, and that is teenagers and women who had an abortion or a first-time delivery, between 1995 and the year 2007. According to the researchers, none had a history of psychiatric problems that had required hospitalization. During the study period, 84,620 of these women had an abortion, 280,930 gave birth. Now, here's the key paragraph from the Associated Press. Researchers say women who seek abortions come from a demographic group more likely to have emotional problems to begin with. Statistics show that a large percentage struggle economically and have above average rates of unintended pregnancies. However, they suggested that it is actually women who have the babies who might have the greater psychological challenges. The most common problems among women in the abortion and delivery group, according to this, were debilitating anxiety, severe stress, and depression. Now, this is one of the most insidious assaults on motherhood and defenses of abortion that I've seen in a very long time. Scientific studies come and go, but one thing is common to them all. The study is shaped by the kind of question that is asked. To conceive of a study that would ask whether abortion or a live birth is more traumatic for women is to ask a question that is morally incomprehensible. We need women to have babies for the furtherance of the human race. That is indeed what Christians understand the entire process of sex and human reproduction to be aiming for. And yet, when you ask the question in this way, it puts alongside, in terms of moral equivalence, the decision to have a baby and give birth to it, or to kill a baby and to abort it. Now, you could go into all kinds of questions about the actual data and the interpretation of it, and if we had time, we should certainly do that. But what's important to note is the bottom line that the media has jumped on this as if it is a big story. And yet, again, when you consider the kind of question that framed this research, it really isn't a big story at all. Finally, one note about this comes in the last lines of the Associated Press report. Quote, "The study was funded by the Danish Medical Research Council and Susan Thompson Buffett Foundation, which supports abortion rights organizations," end quote. While many Americans do not know this, That is the foundation named for the first wife of investor Warren Buffett, who is one of the major financiers of the abortion rights movement. Finally, as if we do not have enough to worry about, a front page of the Personal Journal story in Thursday's edition of the Wall Street Journal offers pictures of a girl about 8 years of age putting on makeup. The headline of the story is, "It's just lip gloss, Mom." But the bottom line of the story is this. Younger and younger girls are using makeup in order to look older and older at younger and younger ages. Major retailers and cosmetic companies are trying to fill the gap by offering products. Both Walmart and Target are rolling out cosmetic lines for very young girls. Now, as the story indicates, it is moms who have to do a lot of the buying of these products, since children and tweens often do not have the funds to spend this kind of money. And by the way, the money is considerable, approximately $9 to $10 per month for girls in this 8 to 12-year-old range. The bigger concern here has to do with the sexualization of young girls and the fact that even as it's taking longer for boys to grow into men, now, culturally speaking, we're trying to rush very young girls into growing up far too fast. Parents, it's going to be up to you, moms in particular, because it will be you who decide to allow or not to allow your young girls to use these kinds of products. Interestingly, out of fears of being accused of overt sexualization, many of these marketers are suggesting that this isn't about making girls more alluring, merely to add glow. Well, just think about that for a moment. When it comes to buying these products, and more generally, when it comes to trying to get girls to grow up in this way more quickly, just say no. Keep in mind the anniversary of the birth of Ronald Reagan 100 years ago. That falls on Sunday. And next week on The Briefing, we'll take the opportunity to talk about what that means. In the meantime, have a good weekend. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For information about the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. And for information about Boyce College, go to boycecollege.com. I want to remind you about the conference called Important. It's for high school students. It will be held on the campus of Southern Seminary March 18 through 19. It's coming up fast. I'll be speaking along with our own Dr. Russell Moore and special guest J.D. Greer from the Summit Church in Raleigh, North Carolina. You won't want to miss it. We're going to talk to young people about how to do what is most important, how to affirm and embrace those beliefs that are most important in order to be, most importantly, what God means every one of them to be, not only for the present, but for the future. I'll meet you again on Monday for The Briefing.